This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
It is Long Shots, golf betting podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. I am Matt Brown. That is Wes Reynolds. That is Kelly Bidlin. And we are here for the Players Championship, the big boy, giant prize pool, giant first place check, and all of the best players in the world. I don't care about you live players. I don't care. All the best players in the world, I'm saying it. I don't care about the live players.
Yeah, they can prove it, John Rahm.
They can have their own fun over there, but it is going to be an awesome, awesome tournament. Cannot wait to get going here. Obviously, right off the top, the big news is we are recording this on Tuesday morning Pacific time. So we do not know currently the status of Rory McIlroy. All I can tell you is that he had a text conversation with Golf Channel's Todd Lewis that says the back is being a little more stubborn than we thought. So I'm staying at home today, which was yesterday on Monday, and tomorrow to continue treatment in South Florida with the hope to travel to Ponte Vedra on Wednesday at some point. And that was the last of it all. And so, Wes, a couple of key things there for me. He didn't say he was going. It was with the hope to travel and just said at some point. And so I just want to put this at the very top of this. Red flags, red sirens, double check, triple check, do whatever if you plan on playing Rory this week in any capacity.
Yeah, and he's already moved as of Tuesday morning to the third choice on the board to 18 to 1. When do you ever get Rory at 18 to 1? Hardly ever, and there's a reason for that. Obviously, the injury concerns and just some of the reports I've been seeing from some of the boots on the ground there at TPC Sawgrass. This is the thickest the rough might have ever been, might have ever been here at the course. And when you got a back issue, and we know Rory's not going to hit every single fairway, as good of a driver of the golf ball as he is, you're going to get in that thick rough, and boy, that's not good for a back issue. So it could end up being much ado about nothing, and he could win the tournament, but I did not like the fact that he withdrew on Saturday. I don't think he would have withdrawn from the Arnold Palmer, knowing how much he reveres the history of the game, if he wasn't feeling something. And he wasn't right there on the lead, but he was still in the top 10, which, by the way, did cost me a top 10 wager on him as well. I don't think he would have withdrawn if there wasn't something there.
Yeah, Kelly, the thing to me with this, and this is why I just wanted to kick this off. Usually we talk a little bit about the tournament the week before, which we will here in just a second, but this is kind of the real major story heading into this tournament. I want to set the stage for everyone here. And like I said, there's a couple of things that were said in that leads me to believe he in the back of his mind is leaning towards not playing, which was, he didn't say, I'm going to go on Wednesday and we'll see how it works out. Like, you know, like it was one of those, if he thought he was going to be able to go, I think the wording is more like, yeah, I'm going to head up there on Wednesday. Hopefully it doesn't tighten up on me. I'll whatever and see how it goes. This was the, I hope to get up there on Wednesday at some point, which that doesn't sound very inspiring to me that Rory feels great about where he's at right now. And even if he does play, that right there alone just tells me that if he didn't know on Monday that he was definitely going to play, then that to me is enough reason in almost every capacity. And I'm even talking about from a DFS standpoint, where usually you want to embrace some risk and try to be different from the field. I think the withdrawal possibility is so incredibly high here with him that I don't know if it's worth playing him in any capacity.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating conversation. And I think luckily, welcome to golf betting in 2026, right? Because this is, like Wes noted, the price point. I think, is there a price on a questionable Rory McIlroy that I could potentially be interested in? Yeah, frankly, there is. He shows up and plays, and I think that he's good enough to go out there and play. If I'm seeing Rory McIlroy 22 to 1, 24 to 1, yeah, I'm interested all of a sudden. So it's a major risk. It is a major risk, right? And we know that he cited back spasms. You have no idea when this stuff can pop up. It kind of popped up out of nowhere on him, reportedly on Saturday when he had to withdraw. It was not something he was feeling, expecting, pops up, can't shake it loose. And down he is. I think you're right. I think the wording is extremely important. I think this is very questionable as we are standing here on Tuesday. But the way that I'm going to approach this is you just, you don't have to have a bet before the tournament. These odds will be up right after they tee off. So like, if I see Rory actually tees it up on hole one and he is going, okay, maybe I want to wait a few, see how he's looking and maybe get involved. But yeah, I think there is, I hear you. I think there's a lot of people that are going to say a hurt back, I want nothing to do with him. Completely understand. And as far as one and done pools, you know, ones that we didn't already use Rory McIlroy in. I think one and done pools and any of that stuff, yeah, I don't think you want to mess around with Rory. But if you want to jump in, grab a live outright ticket or something on the guy after you've maybe seen a few holes, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. And honestly, it's probably something that I'm looking to do this week.
Oh, Kelly going with the jab. Not only did he and I get burned in our expensive one and done that we're in together with Rory this past week. That's actually 2 weeks in a row for me because I had Zalatoris the week before in one and done.
Oh, I forgot about that.
2 weeks in a row of two withdrawals. Yes, I have 2 weeks in a row. So I just didn't even have a chance to make any real money 2 weeks in a row on this. So yeah, feeling real cool about that. That's great with that. Yeah, but again, we'll circle back around to this whenever we get to the players here. Just to put a bow on last week, Daniel Berger basically led wire to wire. Akshay Bhatia ran him down, gets it done in a playoff. And when you look at this, it is the craziest winner's profile I think you will see since maybe like Cam Smith and the Players, whatever it was 4 years ago. Akshay Bhatia couldn't drive the ball better than me on this course and somehow won a friggin' elevated event on the PGA Tour because he did everything else so incredibly well, including putting, which he was just absolutely lights out. You do not see a guy lose as many strokes off the tee as Akshay Bhatia on a course where it is so penal to be best to spray the ball off the tee. He was like just bad enough, but just good enough for it not to absolutely sink him. And there it is. Akshay runs down Daniel Berger. Ludvig, a good showing. Cam Young, a good showing. There's Colin yet again inside the top 10. I'm sure he is someone we will talk about when we get into this tournament. You know, I don't know how you guys felt. I don't necessarily think that Berger lost it as much as like Akshay ran him down. I mean, like Berger, he didn't like blow up or anything on Sunday. It's just, it's a hard course. And, you know, he didn't go light up a hard course on Sunday, you know? And I just don't know if that is, I don't know if that's the worst thing in the world. Right. I mean, it's so Akshay just went out there and did what he had to do. And with that, I'm, you know, tip of the cap to Akshay Bhatia.
Berger. Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it was great down the stretch. I thought that back nine really turned into an awesome just sporting event. And yeah, Matt, I think that was the sense I got too. It was Berger was doing everything he could to just hold on to this lead. It finally, by that final day, right in that final nine holes, it felt like, okay, someone could actually come get me. I just go make pars, get out of here. You can get out of here with a win. And Akshay, to his credit, right? I mean, it turned around back nine and just all these every putt's going in. It was great. And I'm with you. We can rip on some of the driving stats. Now, great, the putting stats were, and often that stuff that we look at and talk about a lot in this podcast. But just, man, in nine holes to go catch a guy that was four or five shots in front of Akshay at that point because Akshay take a step back? Like, it was wild, and I thought it was impressive by Akshay to go do that, especially at 18, and then catch him in the playoff finally. It was big-time moment, big-time win by Bhatia. Kind of felt the same way. It was more just Berger just trying to hold on to the damn thing and couldn't for that long.
Yeah, Berger made a bogey at 17, but it's not like he had that run of bogeys in a row or anything like that. Akshay, by the way, started the back nine, I believe, with four birdies. Like, he was he four or five behind at the turn?
I can't even remember. Yeah. I'll have to look it up.
Wes. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you talk about the driving, 48.2%. So he hit less than 50% of his fairways. Daniel Berger, another one. Yeah, I hate to say I'm kicking myself considering that he didn't get the outright, but so much of this stuff is timing. And with my struggles this year, I have had some of the right guys at the wrong time. You know, Daniel Berger, I know Kelly and I especially have bet him a little bit this year. It's like, it's coming. And then when it comes, we're not aboard him. At least we didn't get that heartbreak from an outright perspective. But Akshay had him at Pebble Beach, five-shot lead on Saturday, and then got nothing going on Sunday and ends up, I think, fifth or sixth in that final pairing. So Morikawa had him at Phoenix, didn't play him the week later, and he wins Pebble Beach. So a lot of this is timing. In some years, you get the timing, and some years you don't. And I don't have the timing down right now on these guys. Hopefully that changes this week.
I think the one thing that I took away from this tournament was, from an Akshay standpoint, if I find him coming into a Sunday a few off the lead and I'm getting a decent number on him, he might be a guy that I'm looking to add live, because he plays super aggressive come hell or high water. And like Wes mentioned, like, yeah, to his detriment a little bit a couple of weeks ago, but, and then he goes and he wins this one, right? Like, his mentality is not mess around, right? Like, he goes and it's pedal to the metal with Akshay Bhatia. And like, that's a type of dude I want to back on a Sunday when he's three down, four down, something like that. And like, getting a pretty decent number on him, that's I'm at least going to tuck that away for me moving forward, because I like that style and understanding that it could go south, right? Like, if he is being super aggressive, I mean, look, the approach shot that literally cleared by 1 foot and then ended up being a tap in birdie for him. I mean, if it is 6 inches shorter than that, it's a penalty stroke and he loses his tournament. You know, it's just like, but I'll embrace that variance come Sunday if I can get a decent number on a guy like that.
Yep, I think it's a good call. And it's, I mean, look, at this tournament, he was kind of always playing from behind and kind of had to leave it all out there. But yeah, there was even a couple of those tee shots late where I'm like, man, like, you don't want to dial this back a little bit? Like, you've been a disaster off the tee. And it's just like, no, let it rip.
Yeah, no, he's a letter rip guy. And so, we know what we're getting out of Akshay. But here we are heading over to TPC Sawgrass, $25 million purse here, 4.5 to the winner. So if you're in the one and dones out there, another time to not hold back. Go ahead, empty the clip here with one of your studs, because this is a very, very big one. And Wes's full write-up over at VSiN.com as always. But Wes, we are heading to TPC Sawgrass here. We have a little bit of sample size with this moving into March from May, and the course has played at least a little bit differently since they did that.
Yeah, absolutely. It has 123 players, so a smaller field actually than usual. Usually it's like 140-something, but only 123 this year, top 65 in ties. Make the cut for the weekend. Like you said, Matt, $4.5 million to the winner. And stadium course, TPC Sawgrass, one of the most iconic courses, Ponte Vedra Beach, just a little bit away from Jacksonville, not too far outside the city limits. Originally designed by the late Pete Dye in 1979, has had a couple redesigns and renovations over the years. Scoring, I think, maybe in March is a little bit more random because the winds can be a little bit gustier down there in Florida, and the course has played a little bit longer with the softer fairways when you get a lot of rain, which they haven't had a ton of, even though more on the weather later, they're expected to have some this week. Par 72, 73, 52, second most bunkers on the tour, the most water holes on tour. There are 16 water holes, including the famous Island Green at 17. No holes play in the same direction, by the way. There are left dog legs, there are right dog legs. Fairways, average width, not too narrow, not too wide. Rough grown out this year. And I mentioned that at the top when we were talking about Rory. You're in that thick stuff, man. You might have to take some medicine this week. It might not be quite open rough, but it's going to be pretty thick here this week. Poetriv greens now. 5,500 square feet on average. They're fast, 13 on the stamp. They were Bermuda overseeded in the past. They still have a Bermuda base, but the bent grass is gone, so they go for that Poa Triv overseed. This Poa is going to be a little bit different than what you see on the West Coast, though, like a Torrey or at Pebble Beach. It's not as bumpy, runs a little bit more true, runs a little bit more smooth. But typical Pete Dye golf here that we'll talk about several times this year, as he has several courses that are annually played on the PGA Tour. It is risk-reward. It is hit it toward the trouble And if you can escape the trouble and stay out of the trouble, you've got a better shot into the green for your approach. So it's kind of like you got to hit it toward the water, or you got to hit it toward the bunkers. You can't necessarily play it safe. You were talking about that with Akshay, Matt, at Bay Hill. What did the king, Arnold Palmer, the namesake of the tournament, always say? Be bold. And he certainly was. And you got to be bold here on these Pete Dye courses. And some of the other Pete Dyes, by the way, River Highlands, Kiwa Island, where you are, or Kiwa Island, Harbor Town, where you have the RBC Heritage, Whistling Straits, Stadium Course at PGA West. Then you could look at some of the other Florida courses as correlations, PGA National, Bay Hill, Innisbrook, a little bit of TPC Southwind, Sedgefield. So have the hole-by-hole video from Golf Digest implanted in the article that's going to be up on VSiN.com. And then you look in the past, a lot of class players here, a lot of major champions, Rory, Scotty, and Scotty the last 2 years, Cameron Smith, Justin Thomas, Webb Simpson had won a major, Jason Day, Tiger, obviously, Martin Keimer. So you've had a lot of major championship winners, and really some of the all-time greats have won here. Jack Nicklaus, Freddie Couples, Tiger, Davis Love, Scotty, Rory, et cetera, et cetera. Phil has won here. Major champions galore. So you'll get some surprises every now and again on the odds board. I think Siwoo, when he won in 2017, was like 500-1. And now seeing him in like the 20s in this field, it's like, oh my God, I know he's been playing well this year, but man, to see him that low in this class of a field was a little bit striking. But you're usually going to get a class player win this thing.
Kelly, you know, this is one of those you're going to be wanting to be in front of the television on Sunday as this thing is wrapping up. For my money, one of the best, if not the best finishing stretches in all of the tournaments that we're going to watch this year. You get the risk reward par five on 16. So if you need to go score, you have a hole you can score in the final three holes. But again, there's water short, there's water to the right. It's like scorable, but it is also double bogeyable as well. Then of course, 17, which we know, the nerviest of all holes. Yes, it's going to be a little short wedge for these guys. And yet we will watch ball after ball after ball after ball after ball go into the water. And then you get 18, a long closing par four. There's water to the right of the fairway and the green and all of that. It's like, it is one of those things where you get these final three holes. The tournament is not over after 15 holes. I don't care who is sitting where in this thing. And so like, it is definitely must watch television for the final three holes.
Yep. One of the best out there. And I don't know what we put this in Pebble with as far as most picturesque probably of golf courses that you're going to see all year long. So yeah, awesome event. Look, I think just being completely honest, not a tournament I've handicapped amazingly well in the past. I think it's one of the tougher ones that we talk about every year with all the water that's out there. And I know we're going to get to it, but it's birdies and bogeys every single hole, high percentage for both of them. You could go low, you could put up a double really easily if you find yourself in the water. It makes it very tough to predict this. I think if you are, we often say this during the football season, don't judge yourself off 1 week results, right? If you are just getting into golf handicapping and this tournament goes real south real quick, don't beat yourself up too much. This is one of the hardest ones to predict every year because of the water that is involved. And how much this can swing leaderboard. So, look, I love betting it. Definitely a different kind of betting style tournament for me. This is kind of back to what we often do during fall golf or beginning of the tournament. A little bit more outrights for me, and not trying to get really picky and heavy on top 20 positions and stuff like that, because your soul is just going to sink, and your heart will sink in your chest when that top 20 goes from a T16 and double bogeys down that stretch and you're sitting well outside that top 20. So that's kind of where I split up my bets a little bit more when we're attacking this type of tournament, but it's great. It's great. I can't wait to get into a little bit more with you guys kind of on some of the details, but the rough being grown out west definitely caught my attention. Keep it in the fairway, hit some greens, have a good short game, just keep it out of the water. It's a real easy course to play. It's not a problem, right?
Yeah. We'll see about all that, I suppose, whenever it's all said and done. But we go in each and every week and we break down all this stuff, but like the odds board is super interesting this week because Kelly, it's gone now, but yesterday was the first time We have seen a 5 next to Scottie Scheffler's name since I can possibly remember at FanDuel, which is still the market high, by the way, out there, plus 480 on Scottie Scheffler, but plus 505 yesterday on Scottie Scheffler, who is not playing like Scottie right now. That being said, we have not seen a number like this in, you know, 2 years on Scottie Scheffler pre-tournament. And so you were talking about, is there a number that would force you to bet Rory McIlroy? I'm kind of starting to wonder to myself if there is a number that would force me to bet Scottie Scheffler. I don't know if we're going to get there. Like, it seems like we've already gotten some buyback when it got to 505, back down to 480 right now is the market high. But there seems to be now at least a little bit of drift and a little bit of doubt in people's minds after Scottie has been a little bit shaky after his win.
Yeah, I do think it's probably because of Rory going to, I don't want to say fly under the radar, because it's really hard for Scottie Scheffler to fly under the radar. But yeah, if Rory's 1A as far as story this week, it is Scottie Scheffler in this form that we're talking about rolling into this tournament. I don't really know how we discuss this, guys. Scottie Scheffler is still a really good golfer. He is still putting up really good stats. It is just odd to look over and see, this is not Scottie Scheffler level approach play. This is not what we're used to when it comes to the irons. Now, is this putting and around the green and the short game stuff making up for it a bit? Yes. Is some of his short game numbers, you know, about as good as we've seen consistently over a long period of time in forever? Yeah, they are. But like, this is also, I think, also a good example of why we make such a big deal out of approach stats every week, right? Like, this is the type of play that puts yourself into position time after time after time again to go out there and win. And it's just not what it once was. And I don't want to overreact to it. I do think some of the, I think what's causing me to be a little bit more cautious with Scheffler than even the numbers is the Scottie Scheffler body language that I just do not remember seeing in a long time. The constant looks over to the caddy, or what the hell's going on, or what was that? You know, it just confused at distances and shots or clubs. And I don't, there's a lot of confusion and anger going on with Scottie Scheffler I just don't remember seeing in a long time. And it's, I think for when we're looking to attack further down the board, I hear you, Matt. I think there's a price point on everybody. I'm not close to this, though, still at shorter than 5. I don't really have any interest, and it's very easy for me to look past Scottie Scheffler right now.
Wes, to give the other side of the coin here, if we're talking about this guy playing, air quote, bad and whatever, and his floor is T24. I mean, like, he lost on approach, which is what he does. He lost putting a little bit, but was still green off the tee, around the green, tee to green, all the things like that. If his floor is T24, I think it's fair for us to ask, are we being a little too harsh? Are we being a little too crazy about what is, I guess, a mini slump where a guy finally finishes outside of the top 20?
I guess that we probably are when you look at the numbers. And this year, by the way, Scottie Scheffler currently ranks, I believe, 47th on approach. So that's still above average.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well above average on the PGA Tour. His drop, though, was from like historic numbers, considering the fact that he was number one for approach last year. He was almost a half a stroke better than the next competitor. Victor Hovland, by the way, was number two on the PGA Tour last year for strokes gained approach. And he was a half stroke per round better than Victor Hovland. That shows you how dialed in this guy was. Mm. So I don't know if he's all of a sudden lost it. He's just, I think, kind of come down from his peak a little bit, you know? So, I'm not betting him this week, and I think he probably should be a little bit higher. He should probably be maybe 6 or 7. Like nothing ridiculous. Like, this shouldn't be, Scottie Scheffler's 10-1 or something. He's still the best player in the world. And he's already, by the way, won this year, of course, earlier this year at the American Express, but it's still a win. So he just, you know, maybe dealing with a little bit of the confidence, because when you have it dialed in like he had it dialed in last year.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you're not quite there. You're like, oh, my God, what's wrong? And that's why he's maybe a little bit unsure of himself, because he knows what he's capable of. But it's understanding the fact that that was like a historic run on approach. That was the best ball striking we had seen, obviously, since Tiger. I know the Scottie Tiger comparisons get very tired. and are kind of hackneyed in their own way. But in terms of just the raw stats, not necessarily the win equity or what you were to the game or, you know, how big of a star you were or not, those numbers were on par, I think, in terms of the ball striking. And it's just, it's not there right now, but I don't think it's totally went away. So that's why, you know, I'm not really wanting to back the guy, but I'm not really wanting to fade him either.
Yeah.
Because no, you never know. You never know, because it feels like it's right there. It's like, okay, riding a bicycle. Okay, there it is. That's more like it. And then all of a sudden he's running away from everybody. So I still think the fear factor is there. It's maybe not as pronounced, but it's still there, believe me.
Yeah, I, and this is, you know, my final take on this, and we'll get to our models and things like that, is like, yes, he is not playing as well as we are used to Scottie Scheffler playing. Also, everybody else is freaking better. Like, I mean, like this, the depth we have on the PGA Tour right now is unparalleled. I mean, it is unbelievable.
How many guys this year, Matt, have we seen like, oh, their club head speed is up?
Yeah.
Or their trajectory is up? Because all these guys went and worked in the offseason. Like, I got to get more distance, or I got to do something to compete with this guy.
Yeah.
So that's,
and they all did it. And like, the depth is insane. I mean, like, when we get to the guys that I bet this week, like, there's pretty big numbers attached to their name. And I actually think they have real win equity in this tournament. It's just, again, the depth on the tour is just, it's just absolutely insane. And so, guys, as we do each and every week, we run our models. We put in the stats that matter. Hat tip to everybody that programmed everything. We'll say it again. We do not code, but we go in and lean on the hard work of others. We do put in the stats our own by ourselves. We do weight them by ourselves. So it is our version of these models, just not models that we proprietarily came up with or anything like that. And so with that, Kelly Bidlin, what did you build your model around this week? I know at each and every week we'll do the disclaimer. It's always going to be approach. Approach is always going to be weighted incredibly heavily. I guess the question this week, given the course and given the conditions and given what we know, how heavily did you weight it this week?
Yeah, it's and then just one quick final thought. Sorry, guys. I think the other thing that's interesting when we talk about these guys and just the landscape of golf right now, it's you're not just talking about the next tier down, right? Like, some of us were talking last year, it was okay, Tommy Fleetwood, Xander Schauffele. Those guys are struggling a little bit out of the gate. So it's, yeah, man, I we got a really exciting season ahead of us, especially when we get into the majors here. And yeah, starts this week. Look, for this tournament, it gets, I want to say, kind of basic for me. I just don't think you want to go doing too much here when you are really at the end of the day. I was joking about it earlier, but it's keep it out of the water, keep it in the fairway. I think absolutely of note what this rough has done and how much they're growing this out. You brought that up earlier, Wes. Absolutely major factor for me this week, just reemphasizing a little bit of accuracy off the tee. We have seen in years past, these guys often club down at certain holes, go off of driver. The past couple of years, we've seen that driver rate increase, though. So that's one that I'm kind of being a little bit more open-minded about as well. We've talked about this many times on this podcast this year, about some of these guys just being more comfortable ripping driver out of the bag. And as long as they have room to make it work, they're going to hit the thing. And I think that's what we've seen some of the past couple of years. So looking for that accuracy off the tee, put yourself in fairways. And then yes, heavy, heavy, heavy approach week. Got to hit these greens. You're dealing with smaller greens, look, tighter fairways, smaller greens, got to play into them because they're smaller greens. We talk about this often. You're naturally going to have some shots roll off. You're around the green play, and scrambling is going to be tested here, especially if you get wrapped up in the bunkers or you have to deal out of the water or whatever. Scrambling will be tested here at some point. So really, look, it's, I always call those like kind of save your ass stats, right? The around the green, the scrambling, bogey avoidance. That group, I think, is definitely emphasized for me this week. And then it's really ball striking with more of an emphasis kind of on accuracy off the tee. That is the vast majority of it. Did add in a little bit of putting. I wanted to look at the par fives. Are really the only group of holes here that are easily scorable. Each one of them, I think you have to be able to take advantage of that. We talk about that often on par 72 courses where you got to go get it like this. So par five scoring. And then look, it's just a very, very tough set of par fours. So par fours scoring included for me as well. And that's basically everything, fellas. Not an overly complicated model for me this week.
Wes, Is there anything that you added that you didn't think you were going to add? Is there anything that you weighted super heavily or actually didn't prioritize this week that maybe you thought you were going to?
I weighted good drives gained a little bit more than I thought I would, because of course, good drives in layman's terms, off the tee and approach play are combined in this stat. And this is the ultimate positional course. Players club down off the tee. They don't pull driver every single hole, even though the driver usage, as Kelly mentioned, is up, because there are ways to attack that if you can go over these dog legs and if you feel you have that power. And some of the longer hitters certainly do. But you got to avoid the water hazards. And what this category does, good drives gain, ability to reach the green even when you miss the fairway. And so I did that a little bit more, and I included a little bit of strokes gained off the tee for context. Matt, you did mention, I have to mention this because you mentioned this earlier when we were talking about Akshay last week at Bay Hill. You mentioned Cameron Smith, 2022, strokes gained off the tee. He was 68th in the field, minus 5.2 strokes, but he led the field in putting and was fifth in approach, which is basically what Cameron Smith does. He's all over the place, you know, same game, but I also did approach. Approach every year, you've got to be pretty much in the top 5 to 10 in the field, unless you're Webb Simpson, which I was actually on in 2018 when I used to hit golf outrights and got very lucky that week because he was 92nd in approach, but he was made every single putt. He was number one in strokes gained putting that week. But if you look, McIlroy 5th, Scotty 7th, Scotty 4th, Cameron Smith 5th, Justin Thomas 5th, Rory 6th. Like, you got to be up there on your approach shot. So I think you definitely have to weigh that. But good drives gained, I did weigh a little bit more. I put a little bit of strokes gained around the green, scrambling combo platter here, even though Rory, by the way, was 51st here last year. He was the only player's winner, as I've gone back over the last decade, to lose strokes around the green. Like, you know, you got to, and you're chopping out of thick rough and also some short grass because the greens might be firm and might not hold these approach shots. So I think ARG might be a little bit more important than we would think this week, even though I didn't weigh it super high. But I think it's certainly something you got to look at. Bogey avoidance, Kelly laid it out earlier. You don't win making pars here. Okay, this is not the U.S. Open. You know, we're okay. I'll take 18 of them, as David Sims, Don Johnson would say in Tin Cup. You're going to either birdie or bogey here, or more worse. So bogey avoidance, birdie or better percentage. And especially on these par fives, like these par fives are about 40% birdie or better rate. Same kind of as Bay Hill last week. Maybe, okay, just get through it. The other 14 holes, but birdie or better those par fives, and you know you're going to be in the high teens, and your scoring at least is going to be in the mix to perhaps win this thing. You execute the right shot, this course can be had with low numbers, as I was mentioning with the Pete Dye design. Players got to attack those par fives though, so strokes gains, par fives, I think certainly. Putting, I did more of a general because we've seen the surface change, because this is a Bermuda base, but it is Poa-Triv. Overseed, you don't necessarily have to putt great to win here. I think Scotty last year was like 37th and 48th the year before. So ball striking wins at the players, but we have seen guys putt to victory here. Cam Smith, Webb Simpson, who I mentioned in 2018. By the way, Rory was 10th in the category last year. So I looked at like general putting, but I didn't weigh it super high. And then there's some kind of like tiebreaker type of stuff that isn't modeled heavily, like strokes gained Pete Dyes. Something you're going to want to look at or against elite fields. If you go down that, like that rabbit hole with our friends at BetSports or whatnot, there's different little categories that you can kind of play around with. That's something you want to, from a percentage standpoint, probably go very, very small, but it's kind of cool to look at in context, like, okay, who plays well on these type of courses over the years? And it's the usual suspects that you would certainly think.
Yeah.
Zero course history for me at all. None. It's not predictive here. It's just too random. I think you can put it in there if it makes you feel warm and fuzzy. But look, just like we saw a couple weeks ago with Shane Lowry, one bad swing here, you can be playing awesome. One bad swing here and you can lose the tournament. We have guys that have won this thing that have missed the cut as well. I mean, it's just not one of those that I'm going to really worry about too much here. I think the only thing that I did differently, and Wes, you mentioned par fives, but it's not really indicative in the history of this. Like, if you look at the, like, as to what has really won this tournament, and I was actually talking about this with my buddy, John Hasselbauer, who does a great articles on golf as well out there. And I'm going with kind of a gut feeling here in this with the evolution of the game. And Wes, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about when we were just talking about the tour in general. Everybody's longer. Everybody's faster. Guys are going for it in two way more than they used to. Like, they're getting there, by the way. Like, guys that you think, like, you're like, this guy's 265 away. Like, whatever. Pulls the three wood. He's frigging on the green. Like, it's just, it's like, it's crazy. Like, all these dudes are doing it. And so I put, like, a fairly heavy emphasis, like, much more than I thought, emphasis on par fives. Look, there's only five holes that play under par on this course. One of them is a par four that plays 0.02 under, basically plays neutral. And then the other four are all the par fives, and that's it. And every other plays above par. And so I'm going to look at these dudes that are going to be aggressive, and they're going to go try to score on the par fives. And then maybe they can, like, dial it back a little bit on some of these par fours that are a little bit tougher and avoid the big numbers and avoid the sixes and the sevens on the card and stuff like that. And so, I think that's the only difference for me, maybe from what a lot of people are doing with their models out there, where I put a fairly heavy emphasis on par five scoring.
So Matt, just to add on to that, because I think the other part that I like about that, and I weighed it pretty heavily this week, doesn't sound like as much as you, but I weighed it pretty heavily as well. It's also a workaround to, like, okay, I did some strokes gained off the tee. I didn't do any distance stats, though. And it just, you can kind of think your way through this, right? Like, the better par five scorers usually going to be guys that give themselves a little bit more length off the tee or longer with approach shots, right? So, yeah, like, maybe I'm kind of fishing for that in that stat. I don't really care, though. Like you said, at the end of the day, however you get it done, as long as you're able to go up there and score on those par fives that you got to get after, that's the most important factor. So, yeah, I'm with you. I didn't avoid it.
We have a hard out now these days, guys. So we've got to get to our picks here so that we can make sure to get it done here. So Wes, let's we put the stuff in the models, we spit some stuff out. So what ended up on the card?
Yeah, and my card not yet complete. I reserved the right to add one or two more, but they were all kind of in, like, the same range this week. And maybe it is a little bit, you know, not to get too much in the interest of time, kind of the psyche of the better, because I haven't gotten an outright yet this year. And you know, I'm trying to put one on the board. So that probably made me go a little bit more conservative in terms of the price, where I didn't maybe take as many shots, even though, Matt, I know you're going to have some big numbers. And there are some guys at some good numbers that could certainly win this tournament and are in good enough form. And I considered a couple of them, one being like Jacob Bridgman, who I saw close to 75-1, didn't end up playing him, may end up adding him if that number is at least still close. But I started with the guy we've already mentioned, Morikawa, who you could, you know, he's now drifted into, I think, the high teens. There's still a couple 20s or above out there, but he's just kept a good run going. T7 at the Genesis, fifth last week at the Arnold Palmer. He was my nearest pursuer, just never really could get right there. And that's kind of been the story of the year so far. You would think, by the way, that this course is perfect for him.
Yep.
Just perfect for his game. And yet you look to, Matt, your point on course history, where you want to ignore it. Colin Morikawa's got one top 10 in five appearances here, even though this is, like, the perfect course for him. And I'm going a little narrative street here, because remember, this was last year where he was always seen as the good guy and always smiling and happy. And he got in that kerfuffle with the media because he skipped that post round the week before at Bay Hill, where he blew that lead and Russell Henley took it from him with that chip in on the par 5 16th in the final round. Morikawa, we don't even need to go through the stats. Third in this week's field for the season on approach and in good drives gained. The ball striking's terrific. The putting, you know, it can be a little more missed than hit, but this is a guy, I think, that just sets up really well, and I got to continue to keep riding him because I think he's got a lot of confidence, and I think mentally he's in a good place right now. Like, you know, he and his wife are expecting, and he's won again and got that monkey off his back. So that's going to put you in a good mental place. We talk about mental place for betters. It also applies to players, and no more so than the game of golf. So when you're not winning, man, it gets in your crawl a little bit. Certainly has mine. And it's gotten in these players' crawl. And then Colin Morikawa just takes one. to get the monkey off your back, and he got it at Pebble Beach. So I think winning begets winning. Would not be surprised to see him raise the trophy here this week. Another player I took at a poor number, Ludwig Obert, 28-1. And this was one I was reluctant, but I feel like it's a FOMO play. I feel like if I leave him off, he's going to win. And last week, I kind of felt that, even though I had a placement market on him. He showed signs at the Genesis with the ball striking, even though he didn't contend. And then last week at Bay Hill, by the way, third overall, ranked second tee to green. Let's look at the ball striking. Number one for driving distance. Number two in accuracy. Number one in total driving. Fifth in greens and regulations. Second for ball striking. And this is kind of a home game for Ludwig. Ludwig is one of several players that live in Ponte Vedra Beach. So he practices here a lot at TPC Sawgrass and plays this dive. There's two courses, by the way. There's the Dye Valley and there's the stadium course, which, of course, they're playing this week. So Ludwig, not the best number. I mean, I wish I would have gotten the 40s that were available last week. I didn't do a lot of future players championship betting. So you will see a lot of numbers out there of guys that maybe bet these a few weeks ago and have way better numbers. I'm betting like this week's numbers, which are not as good, unfortunately, on Ludwig. Cam Young, 35-1. Third and seventh last two starts, led the field OTT last week, third and ball striking at Bay Hill, much like Ludwig and much like Morikawa, never got quite close enough to put that pressure on Berger. Akshay went and caught him. Those guys could not. Cameron Young, you look, speaking of bad form here, 51st is his best finish in four appearances here. But if you look at the recent, I think that that's going to overweigh the course for him. Top 10 in eight of his last 15 starts, including that victory last fall at Sedgefield, which is where the Wyndham is held. Kind of a comparable course here. I think you have a lot of guys that have won there, played well there, that have won here also at Sawgrass. So Cam Young, 35-1. And then two guys, because I mentioned that I've been mistiming some of these guys, that I'm going to stick with that have not rewarded me, because I feel like if I don't stick with them, they're going to win and I'm not going to be aboard and I'm going to be kicking myself again. Vic Hovland, 40-1, T3 here in 2023, ninth the year prior. On the other hand, to your point about course form, he shot 80 here last year in the first round and was dead last. And then won the Valspar the very next week when he went to like 60-something to one. Some absurd number on him. Couple of down performances in California, putting, but 13th last week at Bay Hill. So maybe starting to get some momentum, as might be Matt Fitzpatrick at around the same 40-45-1-ish. And actually has drifted a little bit downwards now that I'm looking at the grid. Course form's fickle. He's missed the cut here three of the last 5 years, but he's also finished fifth and ninth here. Approach, I think we feel like it's mainly the name of the game here. Eighth at Scottsdale, third at Pebble Beach, 10th in Riviera for his irons. So the irons are great. The putting is not, but the putting was better last week. It did show some signs. He was 14th, I believe, in the field in putting. So I think maybe he can keep it going here. And then Minwoo Lee, who was sixth year on debut in 2023, T6 last week at Bay Hill, top five with the irons, 12th at the Genesis, and was also T2 with Sepp Straka behind Morikawa at Pebble Beach last month. We know what a great driver of the golf ball he is in terms of his length, and he can kind of move the ball in different directions off the tee. Can the iron play match? And that's going to be the trick for Minwoo. So Minwoo Lee finishes out the card. A couple I did consider. I did consider Knapp, and I also considered Jacob Bridgman was another one I looked at. So those are guys. Chris Goddard up also a near miss for me. But those guys are all condensed right in that price range, anywhere from like probably 30-50-1 on the board. I think the mid-range really strong on this board this week.
Yeah, that's Matt will make this quick and easy for you. I'll just jump right in because mine are a lot of Wes's card already. Morikawa, I couldn't help myself. There was two names I thought I was going to bet rolling into this tournament.
Let me butt in because first time ever we have a double – we have a double pod play, which has never happened in the history of long shots. Never in the history of long shots. I'm on Colin and Minwoo, and I know you're on Colin and Minwoo.
Colin and Minwoo. All right, come on down. Yeah, hopefully, like Wes said, hopefully those irons lock in. Minwoo is one of those kind of interesting example golfers on tour where we often talk about all the ball striking and short game being a mess. Okay, short game's looking good. We just got to count on those irons locking in. Let's go Minwoo Lee. So Morikawa, Minwoo for me. Wes, I did it again with Fitzpatrick as well. Ball striking numbers. What changed from last week? I'm getting a longer number. I know I didn't like what I saw last week, but the putter got better, so maybe there's something there. Fitz, I'm in on an outright. And then the only name he left off was Ricky Fowler, the guy who's actually going to win this tournament. Hopefully his round green play is feeling a little bit better this week. It's been the one thing dragging him down all year. Ball striking has been great, though. The putting's been great. Love Ricky Fowler in a shot like in a spot like this. Hopefully, again, the around the green can just be a little better. So him 52-1. Those are my four outrights. I did play top 20s on Jake Knapp and then Colin Morikawa. I went heavier in that market as well. Again, not doing a lot of placements this week, but that's all I did.
Yeah, I mean, not much more to say about Colin. Again, same deal with me. I have an outright on him, but it's going to be loaded up on top 10, top 20 on him as well. So placement market, like very, very heavily on Colin. Fairways and irons, that's what he does. Fairways and irons, you know, that's what we want out of Colin Morikawa. I think people only look at Minwoo Lee as a bomber and not realize this guy's an actual real complete golfer. And if you look, he can do it all, especially scrambling and around the green.
Around the green is really good as well. He's one of the best out there.
Things that I think people just think like, oh, he hits it a long way. Yeah, but he can do everything else as well. I think he can really get it done here. Three more outrights for me. I'm going to hope that it's like in the memory now and then punting off last week or whatever. I mean, if we think fairways and irons, don't we think Shane Lowry? I mean, like Shane Lowry's fairways and irons, right? And I mean, that's kind of what I hope that last week was like, okay, I blew it. I'm punting this one off. I'm going to go get myself right and come out here and play well at the Players. So Shane Lowry, by the way, no lower than sixth in every version of the model that I ran this week. Everything that you would love about a player here is Shane Lowry, other than the fact that, again, he did, you know, kind of punt it off here last week. You mentioned Goddard was off your card, Wes. He made mine. Goddard was a very, very strong model participant for me. I had to go in, dig in a little bit further and realize that, yeah, I mean, this is the type of guy that I'm looking at here, and I understand what I'm getting. He's team no putt. If he makes putts, he has a spike week, he's going to be in the top 10. He's probably going to be competing for the title. And if he can't, then fine. It is what it is. But when you're talking about a guy that's out at 60-ish and further to one, okay, you're going to embrace some of that as well, some of the variance. Last guy for me, hey, man, I'm not getting off of him until he shows me he sucks. Give me Nicolai Højgaard. By the way, at 90-1,
yeah,
the guy is like playing as well as anybody in the world right now, and you're nearly getting triple digits on Nicolai Højgaard. I mean, go look at his stats, guys. This is green across the board on there. He's doing everything well. He's still a child. He's getting better. He's learning all of this. Love Nicolai Højgaard. As always, we say this, there'll be some sort of backup on all these dudes, be it a five, top five, top 10 or whatever, because we don't have each way markets here. So there's all that. The only other, I played the Woo top 20. I don't think he has any win equity here. I think the number on him is pretty absurd. He can't putt at all, but like he makes up with all those deficiencies.
But it's a Pete Dye, and Siwoo always plays well. Even when he's not in good form, he always plays well on these type of courses. But yeah, you can't bet him in like the mid-20s against this.
Yeah, just can't get the outright, but another top 20 there on him. Okay, final minute. As we mentioned, $4.5 million up top from a one-and-done perspective here, guys. Don't get cute. Like, I mean, that doesn't mean like you can't play someone a little bit further down the board. Like, this is not the time to go and play some guy that you're like, oh, I'm going to be different than everyone. Like, it's $4.5 million for this one. You need to play someone that has real win equity, because someone is going to hit this outright in your pool that you're in. And if it's not you, you're going to be in bad shape. And so that's kind of my blanket advice for one and done this week.
Yeah, like, this is not the week to play, like, Brian Campbell or you know, those guys way, way down the board, or even the guys in like the 200 range, the class players. Yeah, there could be a guy that's an outlier, and there certainly will be on the leaderboard on Sunday, but don't go crazy with the cheese whiz here, I think is the best advice.
Yeah, Kelly, I mean, it's you and I, we're going to try to avoid a WD this week and try to claw our way back here in this one. And we'll, you know, we're not going to commit to who we're taking this week, but I can tell you it's probably going to be someone at the top of the odds board.
Yeah, well, I think you and I do have an interesting conversation to have, because I think it would be Morikawa based off of who we bet, but we know that's going to be a popular selection this week.
Yeah. I mean, if we hadn't already, burned Rory or Scotty or whatever, then maybe we would go that direction.
We could use him twice, right? No, wait, that's not the name of it.
Yeah. Unfortunately we did. So we can't do that. So it is what it is, but it is a super incredible tournament. Like we said, you want to be in front of the TV. You want to watch this finishing stretch. It's going to be dramatic. Guys, if you're watching this over on YouTube and you haven't hit the subscribe button, go ahead and do that. Producer Wyatt Tomchek keeps telling us we're not getting enough subscribers fast enough. So we need your help. Go ahead, hit that right now and help us out and get us number there. And over on the audio side, of course, please subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate all of the support. For Wes, for Kelly, I am Matt. Good luck on all your players' bets.